council meeting for Tuesday, October 23rd is now called to order. I'd like to welcome everyone here today. We have regrets today from councilors Jack Cansey and Kevin Muse. I would ask that everyone please turn your electronic devices to the silent mode during this meeting. I have no changes for the agenda as was circulated previously. Are there any changes to the agenda today? A motion to approve the agenda circulated would be in order. Moved by Councilor Fisk, seconded by Deputy Mayor Susan McLeod. Any discussion? Are we ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Moving on to 3.0 presentations. This morning under 3.1, we're now aware that it includes the campground infrastructure update with Jonathan Shepherd. Will have to be rescheduled to a later date. Under 3.2, Darwin Event Group, Social Expo, Corey Levy is here this morning, and I would ask Corey if she would like to come forward to speak on her presentation.
So good morning, Mayor Dagley, Council, CAO McNeil, and everyone else. Beautiful morning to come down to your area and talk about the South Shore Expo. So again, my name is Corey Levy. I represent the Darwin Event Group. I am the account and event manager for Darwin Event Group. So who we are and what we do. We are a full event management company. So we actually produce several shows, one being the 20,000 person Atlantic Outdoor Sports and RV Show. That's been running for over 35 years. Halifax Exhibition Center, I am diligently working on that as we speak. We also have produced this year the Lunenburg Craft and Food Festival, Kenful Motorsports Show, a South Shore Expo, of course, and we do several other things as well. So we are also trade show managers. So this means that we take on other projects and work with other companies to help produce their events. Acadia University Craft Expo, which has been running for 44 plus years, is one of those. In addition, we also run a trade show rental company. So that is pipe and drape, carpet, tables and chairs. It helps supplement our business as well. And we have also created a sister arm of our company called Maritime Tents. So that company actually works with customized tenting solutions. So we do festivals, many, many weddings, lots of events, and very, very busy throughout the spring, summer, and into the fall. And always hope there's zero rain on our event weekends. So again, Maritime Tents. And again, that supplements a lot of our events that we do ourselves. So just a few, again, of our events. This summer we did the Lunenburg Craft and Food Festival. A very interesting story behind this event. That was an event that was going for 35 plus years, run by volunteers in the community. There was some burnout involved with the volunteers, some change taking place. An RFP went out. Our company was successful in taking on this event. We rebranded it to be from a craft festival only into a craft and food festival. Our goal in doing that was helping to create a better attendance at the event. The entire event was put together, run, and implemented in 6 weeks. Lots and lots of work. Over 3,600 people attended that event on that weekend. We had 120 plus craft and food vendors at the event. Hopefully you had an opportunity to go. In addition to that event in Lunenburg, we also held a food truck party that was separate for the community, 5 to 8 p.m. on the Saturday evening. And in that event alone, we had over 500 people. the Acadia Students Union, we partner with them to put on, again, the Christmas Craft Expo that's coming up at Acadia. That event has been running for over 44 years and has become a very annual event in the Annapolis Valley for friends and family to get together. So it's a very special one for us. Our company is located close to that area, so again, very special to us, that Christmas Craft event. And we're putting the final touches on our Lunenburg Christmas Craft Expo. That will run December 1st and 2nd. That event actually was part of the new series that we had in Lunenburg. And the interesting part with that is that for the very first time, that will feature over 120 plus vendors. We will have three buildings for that event. And most importantly, what I'd like to communicate is that event and many of our other events feature partnerships. Very, very important to our company. The partnerships that are going to be taking place in this event will involve the community, business, schools. We are hosting part of one of the three buildings is a school that is helping us with the event, the town and local businesses, and many others. So large partnership to put this event on, and we're very excited about it coming up. This is, again, the giant 20,000 plus Atlantic Outdoor Sports and RV show. I have been getting myself up to speed with hunting, fishing, camo, and everything in between. Motorsports show as well in Kentville that we do. Okay, so most importantly, the subject of today, the South Shore Expo, branded home, sport, and travel. This will be the third year for this event. And of course, this takes place at Queen's Place, Amera Center. Dates are May 3rd to the 5th. So just a little background on the last few years that we've run our event. So again, it has been branded home, sport, and travel. Year one was 2017. The event featured a Sip and Savor kitchen upstairs, an RV component, a vehicle test drive, 95 booths, partnered with the chamber. So again, partnerships, community, very, very important to our business and our company. The admission was $8 a person, and then attendance was $24.36. That was year one. Year two, 2018, we had an amazing weather weekend that weekend. So that was the first weather weekend that was amazing in the spring. So with that, we featured again the RVs, vehicle test drive, the booths for business, and a partnership with the chamber. Same admission fee, and our attendance did fall a little bit. 1985 was the attendance. So this year, for 2019, our goals and targets for the upcoming show. So again, the 3rd to 5th of May. So most important to us is we want to increase our event attendance for 2019. We love your area, we love the people in your area, and we love the venue that we're working in. So to drive the attendance is a very, very important thing for us. So we want to showcase the South Shore businesses by presenting selling opportunities in a trade show environment. We also want to foster those partnerships, as we've discussed, by involving local business, municipal groups, nonprofit entities, a charity component, and plan, implement, and be successful with this event. Most importantly, to communicate that new ideas for our event are welcome from everyone. We want to work within the show branding, home, sport, and travel, and to provide and ensure a foundation of growth for this event, and thus create future partnerships and opportunities. So what's happening for this year? So again, we're branded to be home, sport, and travel. Our dates are the 3rd to the 5th, 2019. We want to encourage our vendors to develop a buying theme. So our vendors, we want them to provide show specials. People come to the event to buy. So 98 vendor booths available. Average booth price for a local business, a 10 by 10, is 500 plus tax. There is the availability for nonprofit groups to also come into the show. We feel that that's a very important component to the event. And those groups get a 50% discount. So the kitchen upstairs gathering area, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we'll discuss that as well. We also have a sport and competition component with a health focus and nutrition focus that we're working on. also an RV component, vehicle test drive area. Admission will stay the same, and our attendance goal is 3,000 people this year. So some ideas that we're working on, a community breakfast. So I'm very excited. This is a huge day for me. I'm going to meet a potential partner in the area that's going to help with a few of these food events. So we want to kickstart the Saturday event by providing a community breakfast. We want to include the breakfast in the admission to the event, organized by local business, and they will help volunteer to put this event on. We want to encourage a healthy eating component. We have a dietitian that will be helping with the event. And again, the focus of this is to bring the community, charity, and business together. There will be a donation as well to a local charity. So the same group, a very well-known undisclosed group, will be helping hopefully with our Friday night cooking class. So there is a chef that they work with. So we'd like to provide an upscale evening on the Friday night at the event. There may be a small fee to this, maybe $10 a person, and again, some of that going to charity and to cover some food costing. But we want to limit this event, making it upscale, and again, part of the trade show event, 25 people potentially. There's a local cooking school that will be helping out the dietitian component as well, too. We also have some local wineries and alcohol vendors that will be supplementing with that portion of the event. And full gourmet meal. So we're very excited about that. It will add and enhance the Friday evening and bring community, charity, business together. So for the sport portion of our show, again, community business, very important, and reached out and I'm working on several items. So one is to provide fitness competitions and opportunities at the event. So we want to target those that are new to fitness and also more experienced. Have a children's component, seniors component, women's component as well too. Some road running races, bike races, and limited entry fees to the race. So keep those very affordable. And the race fee to participate will also include access to the trade show. And the goal is to start or and or finish the race within the trade show space. So we're pretty excited about that. It's going to, again, cross-promote our event with the sport component of our branding. So again, bringing community, charity, and business together. So why I'm here today is to really update everybody on what I've been working on. I also am making connections throughout the day with some businesses and also the chamber. One of the things that is very important for me to communicate is how critical it is for us all to be working on a word of mouth for our event, because it will strengthen business in the area and also help as well people coming into the event, attendance, and the event experience itself. So I'm going to be talking to the chamber about the opportunity to deliver a free session on the value of trade shows. I'm hoping to have that going probably within the next couple months to, again, encourage our local businesses to take part, but also so that they can see the value and perhaps what they can bring. A lot of businesses are new to the trade show environment, and we see tons and tons of opportunity and potential with this. So the ask today is to help you help us promote business and the value of marketing our event to over 3,000 potential customers in our weekend, and also to promote business and give the opportunity to sell show specials. So the key is we want to have our vendors come in and make money, so they need to sell products and people need to come in and buy. So we want to really create that buying atmosphere, and also to promote community to attend our event for buying and the experiences that we are helping to create to support our area. So that is a snapshot of what I've been working on diligently. We'll continue to work on till May, and so I invite any questions or comments.
Thank you, Corey. Are there any questions or comments from councilors?
I'm curious how you're talking about the Lunenburg Craft Festival, and mm-hmm. who approaches you for this? Is
all these different events?
Well, and each event is different. The dynamic was very interesting in Lunenburg because it was the town that issued the RFP and that we have been working with.
Okay.
So it's a well-known fact that in communities there is a difficulty generating volunteers, being able to organize and implement events. There's a lot of work that goes into that, promote the events, all of those things. So us being a professional company and also having a track record in that, our goal is to work with communities and talk about what their vision of an event is, be able to work with the partners in that community to make those things happen. And by us, you know, being a for-profit business, we bring perhaps a different atmosphere and attitude into the event. So, for example, the Lunenburg Craft Festival was very different this year than it has been in the past. One of the things that was difficult perhaps for the community is that we charged an admission fee for the very first time. So that admission fee was $5, and it certainly added, there was certainly value for that $5 coming to see 120 vendors. We had local musicians, we had lots of other things going on, food trucks, but that was a change for the community. So I see that as a trend in a lot of the rural areas that we're dealing with, and we're very proud to say that we are the largest Nova Scotia owned and operated trade show company in the province. So I see that as an opportunity for us, but most importantly to communicate that the success of those events only happen with the partnerships in the community involved.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mayor McLeod.
Good presentation there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
When you talk about the expo here in Queens County in May, and you're talking about sports, home, and travel, the three basic main areas of concentration, and you want to attract more people, spectators and people to participate from the public perspective. Has there been any thought of creating some kind of competition within those 3 days that would bring people out to an area to us? And I'm thinking basically, and I wrote this down, and you're dealing with home and you're dealing with the home suppliers of products for building and that sort of thing, anything to do with new build.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about maybe contacting some of the carpenters and having their carpenter competition. And these are just thoughts in my head, right? Yeah, we can talk about it later, but I was just thinking outside the box, basically, of these events and how that brings spectators out. I mean, we just had the Axon competition here this summer, and it was amazing. People came out to that and they never even thought of attending the outdoor events, but they loved that competition aspect. So might bring out a different crowd or something. And then that ties in with your home and the sports and that sort of thing.
Well, Councillor McLeod, I so appreciate that feedback and those comments and ideas, because that's really why I'm here. That's my contact information. Everybody is welcome to contact me with any more ideas. That is a great one. One that I have been working on just in the last few days that has come together is that for the home component as well, we're going to feature some interior design seminars and sessions. I've got a couple people that are extremely excited about doing that, and one that actually is affiliated with the interior design group, the nonprofit group that runs in Nova Scotia. So these conversations just in the last few days have taken place, but people are very excited, and I think that's what I want to share today is my excitement for the area, the venue, the event, and we need to make sure that we're all working word of mouth. There is no better promotion than that to get others excited.
Mm-hmm.
Great idea, and I will continue to follow up on that. Thank you.
Councillor Kelly?
Do you have marketing materials available today?
I have my business card available, so Because we're working on our schedule and fine-tuning the different components of the event, I do not. We do have a website, though, for the expo, so it's important that that is communicated today. And there are registration and applications on that website for local businesses that want to take part. But the components that we talked about today, you know, I wish I could say are 100% solid. They're not. They're getting there.
But people can register.
Yeah.
Businesses can register
now
for 2019.
Yes,
okay.
And I'm very proud to say that we've had some excellent support and the booths are filling. So
okay. It's
good.
Excellent. Now, just going back to what Councillor Fowlett was talking about in the RFP with the town to put on the Lindbergh event, how does that affect their not-for-profits group applying for grants and receiving money from mainly the Canadian Heritage Community Fund?
Well, certainly we are not able to access those grants as a for-profit company. So that's why it's critical for us to partner with those nonprofit groups. So they will work on their own funding strategies, their own ideas and what they want to bring to the events. But we are very open to having those conversations there and to be able to provide booth space for those nonprofits at a 50% discount. And sometimes it's less than that. You know, we're very workable in terms of wanting to have that component of our show. So sometimes those charities are able to, put on presentations, things of that nature. You know, sometimes that means that we can waive that 50% even more. So,
but in essence, though, you're hired through an RFP through the for the municipal government to work with the not-for-profit board that's still there, that's still applying for all the same grants and whatnot, and working with them to put on the event.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
I don't, fortunately, I don't deal with that portion of our events.
Yeah, no, it's
but I can get you some more information.
It's a very interesting dynamic.
Yes.
Because it's happening, you're right, it's happening everywhere across Canada and the world with overrun community groups that are running huge festivals, and you know, people are becoming tired and older, and the volunteers are older and older, and we're looking, you know, it's a great solution.
Well, and I also speak from a background of being involved in as a volunteer in the Annapolis Valley Apple Blossom Festival. So I'm sure most of you are aware of that that organization and that group. And, you know, I don't think that I'm saying anything inappropriate, but by the time you organize, plan the event, you know, having the energy and the time to promote it and then implement it, you know, it's just an awful lot. So yes, I see this as a change in the world of events and community, and an opportunity for us, but also again to be very very key. The only way this works is with the support of everybody and involving many conversations. And as a matter of fact, today I'm going to Lunenburg, and we have a large check presentation, and we are very proud to be able to give over $2,200 to a group called Pro Kids. And so the admission that we charge for the very first time in Lunenburg for the Food and Craft Festival, a portion of that was given to help start Pro Kids in Lunenburg.
Mm-hmm.
So that presentation will be happening today. But again, that is another example of how we want to work with the community. Because we understand that taking an event that has been run by volunteers in the community, handing it over to a private company, you know, there's some challenges there as well. Yeah.
Any other councillor have a question or comment? Thank you, Corey, for the very interesting presentation.
You're welcome.
And
You're
thank
welcome.
You for bringing the South Shore Expo to this.
Thank you. I so appreciate the opportunity.
We will now move on to 3.3, Cook Aquaculture, and we have Andrew Lively and Jeff Nicholson here today.
Good just plug it in there and go, here we go.
Morning, everyone. Thank you, Your Worship, for inviting us here today, councilors. As was mentioned, I'm Andrew Lively with Cook Aquaculture, Jeff Nickerson. I'm going to move around a little bit because I'm going to point at this presentation. We're here today to talk a little bit about Cook Aquaculture, our operations in Nova Scotia, and our plans for expansion in Nova Scotia. But before we get started, one of the questions that gets asked of us a lot of the time when we have a name like Cook Aquaculture is, what's aquaculture? What are you talking about when you talk about aquaculture? So aquaculture is raising seafood in the ocean, and that can be fin fish like salmon, or that can be kelp, or that can be oysters. So that's what aquaculture is. So I hate to go through this presentation saying aquaculture 90 times and have people not know what that is. And a little bit about the history of aquaculture in North America and actually in the world, but focusing more on North America. We had Atlantic salmon in our rivers all up and down the coast of North America for thousands of years. Atlantic salmon is an indigenous species to any of the rivers. You know, my grandfather's from Musquodoboit, so everything goes back to Musquodoboit. Musquodoboit River would have had lots of Atlantic salmon. All these rivers around Nova Scotia into New England would have had Atlantic salmon for thousands and thousands of years. But going back to the early 1900s, we started seeing that the Atlantic salmon populations were going down. So we started restocking some of these rivers. So we knew how to take eggs out of the river and restock some of the rivers, but it really wasn't that successful. To the point where in 1973, commercial Atlantic salmon fishing was ended in the Maritime provinces. Newfoundland came a little bit later, 1979. Commercial Atlantic salmon fishing ended in 1979 in Newfoundland. So if you think of the life cycle of Atlantic salmon, the life cycle of Atlantic salmon is starts out in a freshwater river or stream, swims out into the ocean, and comes back to the very same river or stream where it was born. How they know where to come back to the exact same river stream, they haven't told us yet, but we feel it has a lot to do with gravitational pull, smell and taste of the water, so they know to come back to that stream. But if you know a little bit about our history, which I'm sure you all do, we started putting hydroelectric dams on a lot of these rivers. So the Connecticut River, Charles River, all these rivers up and down the coast of Eastern North America and Western Europe, because Atlantic salmon existed in Western Europe as well, we started putting dams in these rivers. So again, getting back to the life cycle of Atlantic salmon, if they can't swim out to the ocean because there's the dam there, they go through the turbines, they turn into fish chowder, or if they're coming back to the river to spawn, there's a dam there, they can't get up to spawn. So that was really one of the main reasons why the wild Atlantic salmon population was in decline. Pollution and agricultural practices and other practices probably had an impact, but really, people believe that damming the rivers really caused the main reason for the decline of Atlantic salmon. So again, 1973, commercial Atlantic salmon fishing ends in the Maritimes, 79 in Newfoundland. It wasn't until 1979 that we had our first test site for raising aquaculture raising of Atlantic salmon in a place called off Deer Island in the Bay of Fundy. And really, aquaculture didn't get started in this area in any sort of organized way, we'll say, until the mid-80s. So anyway, that's a little bit of the background of aquaculture in the area, and it's not in your presentation, but it's something that I'd like to talk a lot about a little bit before we get going out, because then it'll explain a lot of different things. All right, so this is a little bit about salmon farming globally. 7.5 billion meals per year is how much Atlantic salmon farming produces annually. This is globally. This map just shows where salmon farming happens around the world. The Tasmania, Southern Australia, Scotland, Iceland, Norway, Eastern North America, Maine, Atlantic Canada, Chile, and the West Coast of Canada and the United States are really where salmon farming happens in the world today. That sort of band around the Northern and Southern Hemisphere is the best place to raise Atlantic salmon. Atlantic salmon, that's their native waters, that's their native area. They need a certain water temperature. It can't be too hot, can't be too cold. So that's really the area where Atlantic salmon farming happens around the world. And the number of jobs produced, 52,000 jobs globally, $15 billion in salmon production, So the demand is there, and the opportunity is certainly there. This just talks a little bit about the case for aquaculture. Whether you believe the world's population is going to double the next 20 years, 30 years, or 40 years, we need to find a way to feed a growing planet. We cannot continue to suck more fish out of the ocean. We do, the Cook Aquaculture does have wild fishing operations, wild salmon operations in Alaska. But we know that the numbers that we can take out of the ocean cannot increase to feed that growing population. We need to find a way to feed a growing population, and aquaculture is by far the most efficient way to produce a healthy protein. Salmon are ectothermic. They don't need to stand up, sit down, walk around, swat flies. They don't operate, they don't need to deal with gravity. So their ability to convert energy, to be able to convert their food into a healthy protein, is significantly better than terrestrial animals. A cow needs about 10 kilograms of feed to produce a kilogram of meat. Chicken, 2 kilograms. And a fish takes about 1 kilogram of feed to produce a kilogram of healthy protein. The other slide, the other little graph on the left there just shows where aquaculture happens around the world. Point, if I get this right, 0.0008% of the world's oceans are currently being used for aquaculture today. 262 square kilometers. This is global production of Atlantic salmon today. That's how much the ocean we're using to feed our planet. So, a lot of stuff there. Any questions on that? Am I allowed to stop and ask a question?
If you wish, yes.
Do you want, anybody have any questions on that? Because we're going to make a little jump here into what we're doing around.
Counselors at this point?
That makes sense?
Catch up to you
later. All right.
Sure.
Healthy protein, again, we know that consumers are looking for high omega-3 food, vitamin D, vitamin A, B12. These are all ingredients in salmon and other seafood. But salmon, certainly, Atlantic salmon, certainly is a great way of getting these vitamins, minerals, and fats in our diets. So now we'll talk a little bit about Cook Aquaculture and how Cook Aquaculture started. This is a picture of a salmon egg, an eyed egg. This eyed egg, it would come from a salmon that has been fertilized. Every salmon has about 15,000, depending on their size, about 15,000 eggs. And I would suggest that the growth of Cook Aquaculture that we've had over the last 30 years is very similar to the growth and expansion that a salmon, the changes that a salmon goes through throughout its life. This is the early days of Cook Aquaculture. Started in a place called Kelly Cove in 1986. Those are hand-built wooden enclosures with herring weir nets. The salmon that they put into the site were provided by the Government of Canada. And they started out with 5,000 fish and started raising fish. People thought they were crazy. It was not an aquarium out there. You're operating there with a big tide. Fish aren't going to live. There were a lot of skeptics in early days. This is the family. The family still owns the business. That's Kelly Cove behind them there. The father and two boys, Gifford, Michael, and Glenn Cook, who started Cook Aquaculture and still are full owners today. I think somebody made it freeze on that. What are we doing here? Try to escape. Locked up. Somebody I said I had 4 hours to speak today. No. That person's left.
Again, we're open for questions during the break.
Jeff will.
Yes, any questions of counselors at this point? Counselor Feller?
I have a question about the slide that was up that we may never see again. But
I got to get my laptop.
The one that talks about the good things that are in salmon. Mm-hmm. We've been hearing a lot about the bad things that are in fish farm salmon. So I'm just wondering about the chemicals that are used. And the chemicals that are going into the fish. So, because we don't talk about the negative.
Peter speak to the, some of the stuff that would go into the feed, but sometimes the antibiotics are used with the fish, in the fish, but that's by a veterinary prescription and not used very often. Luckily in Nova Scotia, we know there's a parasite, they call it a lap or a caligus. So we don't have to treat for those, it's like a sea lice. And it hates when I say that word, but it's a sea lice. We don't have those in Nova Scotia, luckily. They do have those in other jurisdictions where sometimes they have to use a therapeutin to remove them. But we have invested a lot of money in green technologies. So now we're using hot water baths and high pressure water to remove them from the fish and dispose of them. So
there are no chemicals that go into a fish farm?
No, everything that we sell is certified by the Canadian Food Inspection Agency and the Food and Drug Administration. So every ounce of product that we sell has to be certified by them. We don't give them any chemicals. We want to have the fish grow to the appropriate size. So we sell things by the pound. So we want to give them the healthiest diet that they can possibly have so they can grow to a larger size. We do not use growth hormones. Legally, we cannot use growth hormones to get them the size. But what we do give them is a perfect diet. Every vitamin, mineral that they need to grow, that they would get naturally, we provide for them in their diet at our own feed production facility in Truro. So yeah, there's no chemicals in the fish.
I think another important factor to that is obviously we look at siting of the aquaculture site. So we look for the best area to set the farm up so that it reduces stress so that we're able to grow the animal properly.
Okay, we're back. We've got one more slide. No, we might have more. We'll see. So Cook Aquaculture today. So again, thinking back to the life cycle of Atlantic salmon, starts out in a freshwater river or stream, swims out into the ocean, and comes back into that river to spawn. We replicate that in our system. So we have freshwater hatcheries. We have freshwater hatcheries around Atlantic Canada. We have sea sites, and we have our own processing facilities, fully integrated. So, and we also partner with many businesses throughout Atlantic Canada. This is just a graph or a chart showing some of our suppliers. This is an industry that didn't exist 40 years ago. Everything that we do, everything that we produce, either had to be engineered here or developed here or sourced here. And we do that, that we have a priority of doing that in Atlantic Canada. And the research and development that we do is done here as well. I'll get ahead of myself a little bit, but we do have some people coming here from Dalhousie University talking about some research that they're doing with us. We're doing some work with Investment Canada that another group, Real-Time Aquaculture, is doing. So we're developing world-leading robotic remote control technologies here in Atlantic Canada for this industry that we are exporting around the world. Here's where our operations are along the East Coast. So hatcheries in New Brunswick, hatcheries in Newfoundland, and hatcheries in Nova Scotia. Freshwater hatcheries, again, we replicate the life cycle of Atlantic salmon. We have sea sites on the Inner Bay of Fundy, southwest Nova Scotia, southern Nova Scotia, and south coast of Newfoundland. And we have processing facilities in New Brunswick. We have a smokehouse in Prince Edward Island. The largest smokehouse in Atlantic Canada is in Prince Edward Island, and a processing facility in Newfoundland. Again, we had to develop our own technology. We have our own net manufacturing facility, so we've gotten away from using herring weir nets. We have nets that we manufacture, repair ourselves in our own facility. Our nets today actually have stainless steel wire in the middle of them, so they're extremely strong and protect the fish. And this is all technology that we're working on here in Atlantic Canada. We have our own trucking company. Shoreland is our own trucking company. The last thing you want, it takes 3 years for a fish to go from a hatchery to market size. The last thing you want to have happen is on Mother's Day, when you have lots of orders, to have somebody say we don't have any trucks available. So we have our own trucking company that delivers our product throughout the Northeast. Somebody was asking earlier how much product. The vast, vast majority of our product is sold in what we call the seafood corridor. So as far south as Washington, D.C., and as far west as Toronto, that's where the overwhelming majority of our product is sold. our advantage over everybody else in the world is the freshness of our product. We can get product to market faster and fresher than anybody else. The number one thing a seafood buyer is looking for is freshness. So we can deliver it better than anybody else in the world. And we deliver it on our own vehicles. And these vehicles are bringing back the refrigerated food grade vehicles, so they're bringing back produce from United States and Canada to our restaurants and retailers. We have our own feed production facility. Again, the majority of our feed is produced at our own feed production facility in Truro. This facility is in the middle of a $25 million expansion. We have to be able to feed all of our fish, and this is a facility that we've owned for probably 15 years, and we're investing in expanding and improving this facility. We have our own processing facilities, as I said, and we're always working on ways to develop greener technologies. As part of our certification program that we have, we're always trying to improve how we do things. This worker is just showing one of the gel packs. We've gotten away from using ice to using gel packs. That's less water use, and that's less weight going down the highway. The thing she has behind her is a styrofoam box, and actually a lot of our customers have switched to corrugated boxes, which means less recycling as well. I would say that about 50% of our customers are able to handle corrugated boxes today. AC Coverts. So we own AC Coverts in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. AC Coverts is a distributor of seafood. They're the largest distributor of seafood in Nova Scotia. So this means not only are we selling our Atlantic salmon to customers around Nova Scotia and Atlantic Canada, we're also buying seafood from producers in Atlantic Canada as well. So we would be buying haddock, halibut, lobsters, clams, mussels from producers around Atlantic Canada. And we have our own vehicles, and we're distributing that to retailers and to restaurants throughout Atlantic Canada. This is True North Seafood is our brand, our retail brand that we use in North America. We spend a lot of time and effort and money on producing this brand and promoting this brand all over North America, and it's becoming a very recognized brand, a brand known for quality and for freshness. Company is also very involved in humanitarian charitable organizations. Our CEO was named Red Cross Humanitarian of the Year last year. We are involved in something coming up on November 10th, something called the Village of Hope. We're raising money for an organization that helps with people with dependency issues. We've always been involved with flood situations. We have the largest fleet of vessels on the East Coast, so when there's a flood, we're the first to be able to get out and respond to that. So we're very involved in the community that we operate in. Best Managed Companies, we are a platinum member of the Best Managed Companies Award Program for Canada. This is an interesting project. This is the Fundy Salmon Recovery Project. This is a project that started 9 years ago on the Petitcodiac River in Fundy National Park. So as I said earlier, one of the things that we did, settlers did, was we built dams on a lot of our rivers, which prevented salmon from coming back to the rivers to spawn. What we're doing with this is a river that had a dam that's been removed. And they wanted Fundy National Park and the Fort Foley First Nations wanted to come up with a way to rejuvenate that river now that the dam had been removed. Initial thoughts were, we'll get a truck, we'll load it up with smolt, we'll dump it into the river. Well, that hasn't worked. That just feeds the ducks and feeds the eagles. So we developed this program where we take the fish out of the river, we take them to a safe aquaculture site in the Bay of Fundy. That allows the salmon to live in a healthy environment. They're not going to get eaten by seals, they're not going to get eaten by eagles, and we allow them to stay there. We feed them till they get to maturity, and then we bring them back to the river with a helicopter and put them back in the river so that they can go back in the river, build their own red, which is a nest for salmon, spawn, and then go back and start the cycle. So this past year, we just had an announcement on Friday. We've had the biggest return ever at this river. It's only 90 fish, but it's a river that had very, very few fish in it, and we're starting to see the fish coming back to the river. So it's a river that we're working to rebuild the wild salmon migration with the First Nations community and with Parks Canada. Also, we're creating jobs in rural communities. We operate, as you saw on the map, in rural communities around Atlantic Canada. You know, there's nothing against call centers, but our people are not working in call centers. They are working on the water. We have people all along the coast of Nova Scotia working on our sea sites, and you'll see some of them around Liverpool as well. Wide range of careers, so we have people, this first guy is a freshwater hatchery manager, obviously administration jobs. That's Dr. Jake Elliott, who's a geneticist. We have logistics people, divers, and the lower right, that's a seaside team on Deer Island. Doing things again in the community. This is a beach cleanup that we did in Jordan Bay. Jeff is around with his team all summer long, cleaning up beaches and having barbecues and participating in the community. That's something that the different organizations are concerned about cleaning, including us, cleaning up the beaches so that we don't have foreign debris coming into our sites. And we just think it's the right thing to do. Dedicated to sustainability. So one of the things that I say about aquaculture is that our first site application was done with a typewriter. And now we're communicating with smartphones and we have PowerPoint presentations. None of this stuff existed when we first started in aquaculture. I would say that aquaculture has developed more technologically than communications has in the last 30 years. The way that we do things, how we do things. Jeff has on his phone an app that he can see the water temperature, oxygen levels of all of his sea sites immediately. That's all technology that's been developed here in Nova Scotia. Our netting systems, our enclosure systems, the genetics that we have in our fish, throughout the entire operation, we're constantly improving how we do things, and the improvements that we've made have been phenomenal. But we're continuing to invest and develop how we do things. And a lot of that, again, is being done right here. And we've had some success with some celebrities as well. You've got to have the odd celebrity on your side. So Martha Stewart and I have been out to a few sites, and she eats our product, and she actually sells our product in QVC. She serves it to her guests at her birthday, when she has her birthday in Maine. So she's been a very good supporter of ours. Rick Moonen, who's called the godfather of seafood sustainability in America, he sells our product at his restaurant in Las Vegas, but he also travels around North America talking about the great work that Cook Aquaculture is doing in the salmon business. That brings us back to what we're here for today. So we've been operating in Liverpool Bay now for 9 years. And we had this meeting scheduled before this all happened. We met with some councillors and the mayor a few weeks ago, and we were asked to come down here and talk about this. We knew that we were in the application process to have a site expansion option for Liverpool Bay. That means that we've applied to the province of Nova Scotia to expand in Liverpool Bay. And the province a few weeks ago granted us approval to have that option. That means that we have the area of Liverpool Bay for a period of 6 months. We have the opportunity to consult with the community about where we would like to expand, where we'd like to put some new sea sites in Liverpool Bay. That has been approved, and we'll have a public meeting on October 30th at the Queen's Place Emera Center from 4 until 7. And we'll have all of our people there. We'll have our operations people, we'll have saltwater operations, we'll have our research people, we have our veterinarians, we'll have the whole team there to answer questions about what we do and how we do things. But also we'll be talking to people about where we would like to see the potential of increasing the size of our existing site near Coffin Island, and also looking at maybe adding a site in Liverpool Bay. So that's where we are right now. We have not applied for a site. We have not been granted approval for a site. The province of Nova Scotia has come up with a new program for site approvals, and this is one of the earlier approval procedures that we've had in Nova Scotia. It's the first time we've gone through it. It's a great program. We've been part of the consultation that put this program together. I would say it's a world-leading program that they've developed here. So all this is we're consulting with the community and people that use the bay, just ask them if they're all right with us potentially expanding in the bay, and then we'll decide whether we want to apply for a site, and then it goes to a board, a panel so people can voice their objections or concerns before a site is granted. But we're in the option stage right now, that we have 6 months to apply for a C site, and all that means is that nobody else can apply for a C site for seats for 6 months.
I think it's important too to highlight the difference between the two processes. The old process did not allow us to do a lot of public consultation up front. Basically, we had to apply for the site, go through that process, and then the public consultation was on the end. This process, the new process that the province has put in place, is good. You know, we're doing our initial engagement now, and over the next 6 months, hopefully we can continue that engagement, but we're going to engage the community before, during, and after the, you know, hopefully we can apply. Whereas before, we would not have been able to engage the community to the end of the process. So, and at that point, it's very difficult to, some of the community people would say, well, you know, you're just consulting us as a check in the box, and it's very hard for us to adapt. So this is a much better system.
And this is a picture, I don't know if any of you have been on the Digby Ferry lately, but this is a picture of our site off of Digby. This is what an aquaculture site looks like today. It's quite a bit different than the original aquaculture site in Kelly Cove. This central feeding system has the feed going out into this site, and those people that are looking after feeding those fish are in an office in Bridgewater. They sit in front of monitors. Jeff has three individuals on his staff that monitor the fish and feed the fish throughout the day, monitor the site, and I won't get into all the stories of lifting 50-pound bags of feed on lobster boats back in the day, but there's been a lot of changes.
Each of those cages is a camera that is remote controlled under the water, so the remote feeders will watch the camera system. They watch the behavior of the fish and know when to, you know, speed up the feed rate, slow down the feed rate, and know when the fish are fed. You know, Andrew mentioned the 50-pound bags. I got to talk about it. When we first started this industry about 30 years ago, we had feed scoops, basically scoops. We would throw feed in, and basically we knew the fish were fed when we'd throw the feed in with their left arm, right arm. That would get tired. We'd go with the left arm. That would get tired. The fish were done. Then we progressed along to like a blower system, and you know, we just went visually looking at the fish, and you know, that was hard to do. Then we progressed to cameras. We put the camera down near the bottom of the cage. We would put the feed in until we saw feed coming down, and then the fish were full, but we still wasted a bit of feed. The technology, we actually have one of our vice presidents of research development has a PhD in fish behavior. So, you know, on a Saturday night, he's probably not the guy you're gonna hang out with, but he's really good on fish behavior. He's teaching our staff now, so they're watching the cameras, they're watching how the fish are swimming, where they are in the water column, so they know how much to feed the fish. So we progressed along really well with that. So.
Thank you. Good. Any questions or comments of councillors at this point? I'll go with Deputy Mayor McLeod.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
It's nice chatting with you a while ago, and got a little bit of a background, but today is more in-depth information. And as you indicated, we do have the site in Liverpool Bay off of Coffin Island, and it's been there for quite some time. And I had noticed that it looked like a houseboat, but that's basically what it is. Is it doing the feeding in our harbor as well? Is that what you mean?
Yep.
So
we
don't have a photograph of our operation, but you chose one from...
Well,
the drone went down.
The drone went down. Okay. All right.
We will have one, again, when the wind drops out. But unfortunately, it was a technical issue.
Yeah, that is the system. And that's another thing that I should say is that we don't use a site every year. So one of the ways that we operate today that's changed in the last number of years is that we put fish on a site, graze them to market size. We put fish on a site when they're this big, take them out when they're this big, and then we let the site fallow. So we'll leave the site fallow for 3 months, as long as a year, before we go back into that site again. So that's one of the reasons why we'd like to expand in this area, is that we'll be fallowing sites upshore, and then we'll come down here and have sites. So we're constantly rotating around.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense in business sense as well. Economic benefits, I know we often think about that as the complete benefit done in a sustainable and a healthy way, that it doesn't affect our environments and, you know, our lifestyles and that sort of thing. So when you're going automation, so that you consequently you don't require a lot of manpower now. So how's that going to affect us here?
No, we definitely do have people on site. So the difference is that we have three women that are monitoring the fish behavior, which we wouldn't have had before. We still have the individuals that are on the site making sure the site is maintained, so there are people out there all the time working, but the fish behavior and the fish temperature is monitored by three individuals in an office. So that's just an advancement that we've made in our system. Also, another thing that we've done is get, and this that's an example of it, is getting to be more of a generalist in aquaculture, to be more of a focused area of our operations that people work in. So we would have people that would be doing the net cleaning, that would be doing that all up and down the shore. So as far as jobs in your community, we at our thing on the 30th, we'll have human resources there. So we are looking to hire people. But I would suggest that, you know, don't look beyond the 10 people that may be working on a site. We're looking for veterinary assistants, we're looking for vets, we're working for technicians, we're working for robotics people. And these are all people that now can work remotely. So we are absolutely looking for more than just site workers in the report. And the regional municipalities being served.
Okay. And another question I had was basically, you know, the location obviously is the right location because of the water temperatures and also the currents and that sort of thing, which, you know, we've had other issues with other areas that were sites. And we won't discuss that, but from a perspective of utilizing our harbor, is there any opportunities to possibly look at a processing plant of some sort here that you might be considering?
Yes. So what we say is, you know, some people say if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. That doesn't apply to fish processing plants. We need to have fish to process before we build a processing plant. So you don't build, you know, your thing to squeeze apples until you have apples. So that's kind of where we are today, is we need to have fish to be able to process. And once we have that, we've kind of gotten bitten by that before, we'll decide on where we process the fish. But we need to have the fish first. So we're working on sea sites, and we're working on hatcheries, and we're working on feed, all the things that produce fish that need to go into a plant, but we don't have them yet. And then we'll look at processing facilities.
I'll give
that
to know.
Well, I guess I want to understand more about aquaculture. I mean, it's important to Canada. It's important to Nova Scotia. And I don't know a lot about it. I mean, but you know, you get a lot of bad press. I mean, what would you say about to dispel the bad press? The pictures we all see on Facebook of these dying, disfigured fish that really sticks in everybody's mind about aquaculture and gives it a bad name.
I would say that you know, I've met with different organizations that have labeled and tried to slow down aquaculture, and I've said that the reality is now that 50% of the seafood consumed in North America is aquaculture raised. The demand continues to grow. The industry has grown up. The industry has changed. So the efforts to stop demand for our product hasn't really gone that well. That's not working. So what I've said is that's not working that well for you. Let's work together to make sure that we work on a cooperative basis. There are certain organizations out there that just don't want to eat animals, and there's nothing we can do about that. So our demand is there. The demand for our product is certainly out there. We were in Matagan on Saturday, in the rain at AF Terrio, where we spend tens of millions of dollars at a shipyard, and people were lined up around the corner in the rain to eat our salmon. So the demand for our product is certainly out there, and the fact that we are from here and have been operating here for 30 years shows that we can sustainably operate here. But there are certain people out there that want to be detractors. Some people, you know, some people blame the internet for everything. Some people want to blame aquaculture for everything. You know, the internet is the reason why the Maple Leafs have won the cup. I mean, there's only so much you can do.
So you said you've been in the Liverpool Bay for 9 years or 6 years?
Yeah, 2011.
Pardon?
2011 we started.
Okay. Okay, so that location has been fallow then. You say it takes 3 years to raise mm-hmm. salmon, and you raise it, and then you go fallow for 3 months?
Yeah, 3 years from egg. So you're in a hatchery for about 18 months, and then you're at sea for about 18 months.
So you fill it up with fish for 18 months, and then once you farm those fish, then it lays fallow for 3 months?
Minimum 3 months.
3 months to a year before there's anything here. Oh, okay, then. So there's currently, out in Wimble Bay, we have fish in there at the pool bed?
Yes.
How long have they been there?
So those fish were put in May of 2017. We're going to start harvesting those fish late December of 2018 to early January 2019. And then once the fish are harvested, the site is going to be fallow until probably June. And then we hope to restock again.
And how many fish would be in there at the moment?
We have 14 cages of fish there.
But how many fish
is
that?
400,000
fish.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That'll all be like this size when they come out.
Yep.
Wow, she has some security around that.
That's what the camera's for.
Yeah, we do have a bed.
You can watch as somebody's stealing all your fish in the bin. Okay, thank you.
Councilor Fisk?
During the presentation, thank you very much. My concern would be, as the fish grow, do you separate them and put them in a larger cage, or the numbers go down in that cage or size?
Yeah, so we do two things.
It just seems to me that they would be very crowded in a...
Yeah, so that's called stocking...
environment.
Yeah, so that's called stocking density. So two things. Salmon are a schooling fish. So they do school together. Even when they're in the enclosure, we only use about 2% of the water volume, 1.5 to 2% of the water volume in an enclosure is fish. We like to, the number is 12 kilograms per cubic meter of water is what your stocking density should be. So that's what we try to maintain for the fish. And again, we want that as well because that produces less stress for the fish. You want to have the least amount of stress in the fish possible. That way you don't have to use therapeutics for your fish, and they grow to market size, and again, we sell by the pound. So we absolutely give them the best environment they possibly can have. If we get into a situation that the stocking density gets too high, in other words, we get above that 12 kilograms, we can separate enclosures, and we have done that. It's not something that we want to do on a regular basis because that can stress the fish as well. But we definitely have situations where we start them out in a smaller enclosure and then we'll separate them out to a bigger enclosure. One unique thing, does that answer your question?
So far.
Okay, any more?
Thank you.
The other unique thing that I would say about our operation is that all of our fish that we raise here are indigenous to our waters. We have only St. John's strain fish raised in Atlantic Canada. And the other thing that we've done is we've taken the DNA of all of our fish, and that's a requirement for some of our operations, some places that we operate. It's probably going to be a requirement here in Nova Scotia, and we're fine with that. We, in fact, developed this technology, DNA traceability technology, so we can trace all of our fish with the DNA of the park. Whether you get it, you know, as a retailer or you get it at home, you send us a piece of the fish and we can trace it with
the DNA. And the government will audit that. So, for example, if a fish is found in the Mersey River that's deemed to be a farm-raised fish, then the provincial and federal governments can take a fin clip of that, do the DNA analysis, and they can determine if it came from a cooked fish or another operator. So it can be traced back to the operator.
Thank you.
Councillor Kelly, you had a follow-up?
Yes. So you said that you've been approved for... your application's been approved by the federal government, right?
Provincial
government. And for 6 months, and what does that allow you to do for 6 months?
We have 6 months to consult with the community and the users of Liverpool Bay to see if we can put another site out there.
Right.
And then we apply for a site, and that goes to a panel.
And what's the capacity of Liverpool Bay that you would be looking at? Like, how far does that go?
How far out
area,
does it go? It doesn't go offshore very far.
Just basically top an island until the point over on the west side.
Right, so you'd be looking at a second
we're looking at expanding the site, moving our moorings out a little bit in the site, and looking at another site.
And how many tanks do you have there now?
14.
14 tanks, and 400,000 fish in 14 tanks. And have you ever considered doing on land?
We are the largest land-based salmon farmers in the world.
So you do already farm on land?
All of our fresh water is on land.
Oh, right, fresh water.
Yeah, so the everything we do for the first 18 months is on land. I think the...
Oh, you don't actually grow them to market on land.
We do and we don't. So we do operate freshwater hatcheries. Again, we're the largest fresh land-based aquaculture company in Atlantic Canada. The majority of our fish we raise just to 100 gram size before they go out to seawater. We do keep all of our brood stock at a freshwater facility. All the fish that we use to spawn in the subsequent years are kept in a freshwater facility. So we know exactly what it would take to do our production on land, and it's about 100 football fields. And a lot of energy and a lot of water. And probably isn't going to taste that great.
All right, so the choice to put them in the ocean and burn them in the ocean comes down to quality?
I would say quality of the product and energy required, and I would say health of the fish. They're in their natural environment. You can run a dairy farm underwater, but you don't really need to. Like, the technology is there, but that's the same thing as raising a fish to market size and land. You have to bring in everything.
Right. Can I ask one more thing? So let's address you. So Cook Aquaculture was the owners of the fish farm in Portington Bay.
We acquired a company that owned that site. There were fish in that site. We harvested those fish. We have since sold that site. We do not own that site.
Oh, so you sold it. So you bought it, you farmed it, and then closed it down.
We bought a company that owned that farm. We raised the fish that were already on that farm and harvested them, but we did not restock. And I think it's important to mention also that we did a lot of work with the Friends of Port Methuen on the site in that area. Right up until the time that we transferred the ownership to another company, and we actually got those two groups together to talk, so I don't know where it went.
Councilor Phil?
One of the things, we're always talking about economy, which is important, but for me personally, I want to know that there's food for my grandchildren, just as you said, but I also want to make sure that we leave them in a world that is better than what we predicted to be. So the questions that I have are, I can hear the numbers and they're quite staggering of the ones off Liverpool. And I know there's a lot of concern about the sludge that happens from those fish. It's right off the beach. Where is that going? It's coming out of the beach. There's been reports of that. All of that is, affecting lobster fishermen as well. So I also I'm here because of my constituents. So I have one that has over 40 questions to ask about how the process happened. So I'm glad that you're having public consultations. But I also am concerned about everything that I'm hearing because it's so local and because it affects us, and that's a beach that we use all the time, and it's a harbor that we use for other things other than that. So can you talk about a little bit about what happens when you have, this number of fish in a harbor?
Yep.
But and I know it's tidal, so that helps, where the Port Methuen wasn't, but still lots of concerns around that for me.
Yep. So I guess what you're talking about is the tiller rule. Everybody knows that when you borrow your neighbor's tiller, you bring back a full tank of gas. So what we do in our operations is that when we're using an area that's a common resource, we don't own it. We get permission from the governments, federal and provincial government, to use this area. Everything that we do is monitored and regulated by the government. And we have done a lot of work with Dalhousie University, with the Government of Canada, with the province of Nova Scotia, researching the benthic area. So that's the area underneath the site. So this is, again, something that, that some of our critics would bring up, the impact on the benthic area. And we've done a lot of research on this, and if you see lobster fishermen out there, you'll see they set a lot of traps around our sites. They are doing well around our sites, but we need to have a clean benthic area underneath our sites for our operations as well. If you have a dirty area underneath your site, it generates and produces a gas. Salmon are not bottom feeders. They are, they're fair, you know, as far as the echelon of fish goes, they're fairly high up on the scale of the fish. They need a clean bottom underneath the site. If they have a dirty bottom, it breaks down, creates gas, and that impacts the fish. And again, we sell by the pound, we want them to be healthy. So we do a lot to make sure that the benthic area underneath the site is clean. That goes to our feeding system. We don't want feed falling down to the bottom and breaking down. But that also goes to the benthic area. The fallowing is that we rotate the site. So if there is any impact on the bottom, we take the fish out, the fish off the site, and the microalgae, I mean the impact on the bottom 6 months, 3 months after we've left is very, very, very hard to notice. You have to look. But the province is going down, taking benthic testing of the area to make sure that we're not having an impact. Again, we do that a little bit more regularly than the province because it really impacts our operations more than, quicker than sometimes our regulators are checking us.
If I could add a couple things, Andrew. You know, sometimes, you know, we talk about we're a new industry. We've, you know, been working for, you know, 30 years, but the last 10 years have been dramatic as far as technology changes. The last 5 years have been incredible, and you know, I'm pretty excited about the next 5 years. But one of the things with Atlantic salmon is, as Andrew said, they're cold-blooded, so they don't need extra feed to create energy. So basically, it takes us about 1.1 pounds of feed to make a pound of salmon. One of the benefits of being an integrated aquaculture company is we have our own feed mill, but we also have nutritionists and whatnot on staff so that they can ensure that the obviously we make money, we put X amount of pounds of feed in and we want X amount of pounds of fish out. So the digestibility and all that stuff, the quality of ingredients, where we make our own feed, we have control over that, so we can make it so that the feed is, you know, highly digestible. There still is, you know, a bit of feces and that will come out. As Andrew said, we're monitored by the provincial government, the federal government, and also with our different certifications, we have to show the benthic markers. You know, as a global company, and Andrew mentioned earlier about some research and development that we do, we actually work with Dalhousie University in Liverpool Bay has been one of the areas that they've done some research on different types of testing techniques for the benthic communities and whatnot. So I encourage you, I'm a layman when it comes to that, they're the scientists, but come to the meeting on October 30th, they'll be there to talk with some of that. And the other thing that we do is when we talk about the remote feeding, and that's not to replace jobs. What that is we have some highly qualified people who are in a controlled environment that are doing our feeding because it's such an important job. We don't want to waste feed. We want to make sure the fish are fed properly so that we can minimize benthic impact. So I think, you know, if you hear some stories or you're involved 30 years ago versus, you know, where we are in 2018, there's a drastic difference in how we operate and some of the outcomes. So again, you know, come to the open house and talk with some of the professors at Dow that are doing this research in Liverpool Bay, and they can give you a much better answer than maybe we can.
So invite your people to come on the 30th. I think the question you're asking is something called carrying capacity of the bay, how much salmon your bay can handle. We have done a lot of research on that. Tide certainly is a benefit. You know, the fact there's nothing between here and Portugal helps out as well. But all of that stuff is absolutely, before we will request a site, we will want to know that as well, because we want the fish to have the ability to grow in that regard.
And I think,
we need to have a full ecosystem there. We don't want this to be like an aquarium where it's just us. We need to have, if other things aren't able to live there, that's not a good place for us. So we want there to be scallops. We want there to be lobsters. We want there to be halibut and haddock and everything else. If there isn't, then there's a problem. It's not good.
Part of the new process that's developed or how things have evolved over the last 30 years. And, you know, we would look at a place that was we thought was a great place for us, and basically that was somewhere that wasn't fished heavily, hopefully not in the way of a neighbor's house, and that would be where we'd try to apply. We still like to keep those factors very, very high, but the industry's evolved now, so we now have oceanographers, and we're taking a look at the hydrogeology, the oceanography of the area. We're putting current meters in, and there's actually a Dow project this summer, I think it was advertised in the radio, they put some drifters in, so that we I guess they can understand the way the currents and the oceanography of the bay works, so that they can help develop a carrying capacity, but also help highlight areas that would be best for aquaculture.
One thing I'd just like to say, I think there's a difference between a critic and a concerned citizen. And I think what we have here are concerned citizens that are, you know, protecting the harbor for other reasons. But I also want to know, my first question was about sea lice, because that's one of the questions that keeps getting keeps coming up. And you're saying that we do not have them here, but it's a concern at other places. What exactly are there? How are you controlling here and not other places?
We don't have to control it here in Liverpool Bay because they haven't, they're not here at this point. And it, with this particular grow out,
what is it?
Sea lice is a calicus. It's a little, it's like a mosquito. If you were thinking of yourself, sometimes you go camping, you get mosquitoes, sometimes you don't. We just haven't had a place where right now we don't have any mosquitoes. So we are in a situation here right now where we don't have a parasite. It does happen in some other areas, and one of the things, that's probably the area that we're investing a lot of, I was going to say the most, but I don't know that for a fact. I'll say we're investing a lot of money in green technologies to deal with that. So we have three that are approved now, and everything that we do has to be approved by federal and provincial governments. We have to get 14 different government agencies before we get a site. So even if the province says yes, we still have to go to Transport Canada, National Defense, Environment. So the three different technologies that we're working on now, one is, we're calling it a spa. It's fresh water that the fish go through and it cleans them off. Another one is salt water, but it has pressure to clean them off. And the other one, fresh warm water, salt water spread. Those are the three different ones we're working on. All green technologies.
Also, we lumpfish are a national predator of the sea lice. So we actually have a contractor to place in Nova Scotia up in Woods Harbor, Pro Nova. So we are growing the baby lumpfish up, and then we're putting them in the cages with our fish in other jurisdictions, and they help. They nibble away on some of the lice. So it's
yeah. So it's a natural predator that would eat that.
I've been involved in aquaculture in Nova Scotia for 25 years, and we monitor for sea lice and parasites, but in my 25 years, I've never had to give a bath treatment or a sea lice treatment.